Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Pirates? Pirates. Oh, hello. Welcome to the podcast. I am Long Rich Silver. With me is Anthony Bones
Hello, Yar.
and Blind Abby.
Well, that's not very nice, but hello.
Would you rather be Black Dog Abby? Peghead. Anyway, yo, ro, bo, schmo, and a bottle of rum and all that shit. It's pirate time. That's what the pirates say, isn't it? Ro, ho, bo, show, bo, etc.
Probably one.
If they've had enough rum or whatever. Yeah, hello, anyway. This is a film chat podcast called Spoiler-Filled Film Conversation, hooray. And this week we are discussing one of the many treasure islands, to fill you in on which one, because there are about 19 of them, is Abby with the details right now.
This Treasure Island is from 1990. It was written and directed by Fraser Clark Heston, based on the novel by Robert Louis Stevenson, and it stars Charlton Heston, Christian Bale, Oliver Reed, Christopher Lee, Julian Glover, Pete Postlethwaite, Clive Wood, and he will not go unnamed, James Cosmo.
And what about?
So, there's a boy called Jim. He works at a pub. This old bloke comes in, makes no sense of himself, well, later on dies. He's got a map. Jim takes it to some rich wankers he knows. They charter a ship. They go look for the treasure. There's this cook who's got one leg. He betrays them. Then there's a bunch of infighting. Eventually, the good guys get the upper hand. But the treasure's not there, but the treasure is there. And then the guy with one leg escapes, and the good guys go home.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I was looking for more of a sort of adventure film about pirates, but yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, I feel like even though Treasure Island is a really classic novel, popular, for adaptations and is well known, I don't think everyone's like, oh yeah, I know exactly what happens in Treasure Island. I think people see pirate movies as a homogenous. Yeah, I don't know. Is Johnny Depp in one? I don't know. Like they're kind of, you might not know the story of it, I suppose, but it's pretty famous. It's probably the top one, isn't it? It's the quintessential pirate story, isn't it? In fiction,
Absolutely.
anyway. So why did you pick Treasure Island 1990 for us, Abby?
It's touted as one of the most faithful adaptations of the book has ever been. So I thought if you're going to do any version of Treasure Island, you do the one that's most faithful to the book, right?
Sure, you kind of
In theory.
pick the one that is considered solid. Yeah, which is why I got it confused with the 1950s one, which I think is the really famous one because it was the sort of one that made the pirate voice famous. Because it was it Robert, what's his name, Robert Newton. So yeah, Robert Newton made the pirate voice, or the sort of vaguely working class Bristolian voice, West Country style, gravelly pirate voice famous. And so the 1950s one, in my mind, was like, oh, it must have been that one Abby picked of all the treasure. When we settled on what it was, I was like, oh, it must have been the 1950s one. And then, of course, when it came to watch it, people were like, 1990s one, is it? I was like, yeah, you told me the Charlton Heston one. Why would you pick that? Oh, it is that one. Shit, we're doing the Charlton Heston one from the 90s. Oh, I've watched the 1950s one for nothing. But yeah, so that would be the one I would have considered the quintessential version, and now definitely do, having seen that one and this one. But I don't know, Abby, have you seen many adaptations of it or read the book or anything?
Haven't seen many, I don't quite know what the word is, but like straight up adaptations. Like I've seen Treasure Planet, I've seen Muppet's Treasure Island. So the ones that are gimmicked in some way, I have seen.
Yeah, with, fuzzy puppets or space bullshit, sure. A lot of people like Treasure Planet. I mean, it's a lot of people like Muppet Treasure Island, which, is a very good turn from Tim Curry as Long John Silver. We watched that one at Oldham Abbey just as a build up to this. And it was solid. It wasn't like the best. It is a Brian Henson Muppet movie after all. There's some good jokes and some fun moments, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, worth a watch just the one show.
Yeah, but this is the first outing with a proper straight adaptation that's meant to be like the novel.
Indeed.
You hadn't seen this before then.
I don't know. I when anything is from the 90s, I don't like to say outright that I didn't see it because I watched a lot of shit in the 90s. I got a
Okay.
lot.
Maybe. All right. Okay. Anthony, what about yourself? What versions of this story had you come across?
Mainly boring TV versions. I've seen a couple. They all kind of meld together in my mind. Because I don't think until watching this one, I don't think I've seen a decent adaptation of Treasure Island.
There's a lot of shite animated ones, I'll tell you that much.
So I was coming into this a little bit weary. I'm like, oh, is it just going to be is the story just inherently boring?
Sure.
Because every other kind of version I've seen of it has been really dull. So I'm
Sure.
kind of thinking this one, which way is it going to go? I'm probably going to get a bit bored with this kind of thing from past experience anyway.
Yeah, we've all been bitten in that way before. So I understand that you were a little bit trepidatious.
And not just that, like, I mean, like pirate movies that weren't made in like the 1940s are generally a bit pup anyway.
Yeah, we've had some fun swashbucklers on this, though. I think we've had the Scarlet or something. What was it called?
No.
The Crimson Pirate.
Crimson Pirates,
Crimson Pirate. There
there
we
we
go.
go.
Yeah.
Some shade of red.
A more modern one that involves seafaring in general that was good is like Master and Commander. So it's not like there's none, but you're right, they are thin on the ground.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like you say, Anthony, there are a bunch of like meh TV versions. I don't think I've seen any.
And
I,
this
yeah.
technically is also a TV version.
Oh, is it? Pretty nice
Yeah,
budget though.
it was made for TV in America, but then it was released as a film everywhere else.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, it's got a good cast, hasn't it?
That was the caveat. You look at the cast and you go like, there might be something here.
Yeah, I mean, back then it wouldn't have been like Christian Bale wouldn't have been a big deal, but it's a big deal now. And Charlton Heston has a lot of cachet. Obviously, Abby, you mentioned a relative of his wrote and directed this, was it?
His son.
Okay, so
That
you've
was a
got.
bit of a red flag when it came up at the
Nipple baby.
Well, it's a get, isn't it? You got get your dad in there, get butts in seats. I think Oliver Reed was the one for me. I was like, "Ooh, Oliver Reed in a version of this," and I was like, "Wait, he's not Long John Silver? Are you fucking out of your tits?" And then it's like, "Oh, he's Bill. Gonna get the name right, Billy
Billy
Bones. Yeah,
Bone.
there we go. He's Billy Bones, which is essentially an alcoholic man. You got a ranting alcoholic. Yeah, that's absolutely in his wheelhouse. So, I mean, if you're gonna get in for something of that." If not Long John Silver. I was quietly looking forward to it. Although, like I said, because I'd watched the 1950s one, and I was like, oh my God, this is quite fun, actually. It's quite good. I watched a really good version, solid. It wasn't too kiddie either. Like, it's obviously like Disney made it, but it had the right amount of tension, swashbuckling, excitement, and a lot of it's in the drama. The story of Treasure Island is, it is very action-packed, but it's also about tension and drama and setting setting in motion an interesting story that's going to boil over later. They put all the pieces on in place, and the audiences, or the reader, I guess it's the case of the novel, are ready for, say, like, oh, they don't know about the pirates, what's going to happen? Oh, you know, that makes it more than just, look, some pirates and ships. Like, do you know, like when Pirates of the Caribbean type stories, they just dump pirates in your laps, and they go, look, there's a fucking curse and all that shit. And it's like, ah, that, there's no tension in that then, is there? Whereas the story in this one is like, oh, so spicy. What an adventure to set up at the beginning. My God. So I thought it had potential. And I also had read the novel when I was a child and accidentally kept the library book for years and possibly still have it, even though it's a school library
boy.
Book. Yeah, sorry. Not paying the fine on that one. Sorry. Not happening. Call me a pirate if you want. I don't care. Book pirate. I haven't pirated it. I've just stolen it. Book thief. Anyway, technicality. Yeah, so I'd read it and I'd seen Muppets version and I've probably caught the odd one here and there, and now I've watched the 1950s one as well, and now we've watched the 1990s one, which we are dealing with. So, it basically starts with you seeing a boat coming in to shore. It's a tiny boat. You're like, oh shit, are they? That's not the boat from this, is it? It's a tiny boat. It's a rowboat with a big sail. That's not one pirate on it. That's no good. And yeah, it's Oliver Reed dressed up like a, you know, captain of a ship, disembarking and looking for a pub. And I guess it's still like, oh, it's a very striking image of a captain. To begin with, but then he is just a tall tales, aggressive drunk man who wastes all his gold on rum and I guess staying in the pub and becomes a kind of mainstay of this slightly out of the way pub, is it? That's the idea. Is it? It's like he wants to be able to look over the coastline, I guess, for other pirates and have somewhere that people aren't going to find too easily. So he picks, what's the name of the gaff that the Jim is from?
Admiral Benbow?
Bilbo Baggins, is that what it's called? Admiral Benbow?
Yeah, Admiral Benbow, I think it was called.
And he is an orphan or something, but he's like a, I don't know, a porter or something in the...
No, I think they say he lives with his mum.
Is his mum, is
but
it?
But not his dad, I don't think.
Right. All right. So he's not fully orphaned then. But they're the, you know, the landlord or the landlady and what's her daughter's mum's called?
I don't think they even name her the poor woman.
So they might do.
Anyway, it's just like there's Mrs. Hawkins.
Yeah, he would be, wouldn't he? It must be.
Mrs. That's a strange first name.
Anyway, they're reluctantly put up with this prick. And then Oliver Reed does his best cantankerous drunk espousing old sea stories about pirating and larceny and murder and treasure and shit, isn't he? Big old loudmouth. If you're trying to be incognito, maybe don't tell all your tall tales about all the trouble you got in, isn't it? So I would say.
I will say, Jesus Christ, Oliver Reed can play an aggressive drunk man really well.
That's because he was an aggressive drunk man. This not is acting, true. They just put him in some clothes.
This is true. And I will say, I'll just jump ahead a little bit. I have never seen someone more believably feel like they're dying before than Oliver Reed in this film.
He's about 8 years away from dying at that stage, I think.
Yeah. Like his that horrible cough and spluttering and just kind of like, oh, it was so good. It was like, oh my God, this man is actually dying. It is horrible.
That was solid. It was really good. It was a good choice to open with him. I mean, it's a good character to open with anyway, because it's that sort of like, oh, well, no one really believes what drunks are on about and old men with stories. It's like, it's a good person to introduce this adventure to us and to have everyone be like shrugging him off as just a drunk. But yeah, it's good. I mean, do you enjoy Oliver Reed Abbey in this role?
He was very good at it. But as the film goes on, I wish that he had one of the other parts.
Hmm.
Because
Yeah, it's a miss.
he would have been... like there was quite a few that he would have been very good at. But I would have liked to have seen him do those instead.
I think he could have charmed as Long John. Sorry, go on.
I wouldn't say as Long John, because I liked Charlton Heston in this as Long John's helper. But I would have liked to see them both spar off each other.
Yeah, maybe. It could have been, maybe he could have been, what's his name, George Mary, or I don't know, someone who else is on the crew that could, I mean, maybe one of the good guys.
No, if he'd have played George, then Long John would be dead.
They'd be upstaging. Yeah. Well, as it stands, old Billy Bones, nice name, you know, he is dead early on. I mean, one of the things that in the conspiracy within Treasure Island, the first mistake I would say that the okay, let's set the story up a little bit here. You know, obviously spoilers, but there's a buried treasure on Skeleton Island or Skull Island? Skeleton Island. This is a skull. I thought that was the one where King Kong's from. I think it might be Skeleton Island. Skellington.
I was the Skull Island in Monkey Island.
That. Anyway, Treasure Island has a treasure buried on it by a Captain Flint, who is a notorious pirate. He is dead, and his namesake is a parrot that hangs about with Long John Silver. But Captain Flint, in the past pre-film, has buried a treasure. The men he took to the island to bury it have all been murdered by him and left out as landmarks to point the direction. rather flimsily, just, yeah, I'll just leave the corpse here. That won't get, you know, eaten or blown
eaten
away.
By animals, yeah.
They'll definitely stay there, pointing gruesomely to where I want them to. But, you know, he buries his treasure. So, yeah, you know, Flint, he buries the treasure. I guess they didn't have bank accounts. I don't know. What's the deal, guys, with burying treasure? I get you sort of hide it for now and come back to it, or you might store some for later. But why would you bury all your treasure and not just, you know, spend it or whatever? Or hold, you know,
they didn't generally bury all of it. They'd bury like a chunk of it, carried some around for spending money, then come back, pick up a bit more, go.
Just get robbed.
They'd leave like they'd always leave a certain portion there, sort of like a retirement fund.
Okay, so it's, yeah, it is sort of functioning as a bank. Although it was a quantity of treasure that you feel like, are you shitting me? That's a lot of treasure. Like, what was it? Like
£700,000, which in those days must have been like 50 million.
Yeah, it's a lot. And you're not sharing that with your crew. They're not, you've taken six of them to, like, I don't quite, the events of how it transpired obviously left a lot of people feeling pretty pissed off about it. So Captain Flint has fucked over his men. He's drawn a map up. He's killed the blokes, Joker style from Dark Knight, that robbed the bank with him. You know, he's killed a bunch of his men and he's come back alone. And then he, you know, he dies at some point. And he's left his map with his first mate, Billy Bones. And Billy Bones has escaped from the bulk of the pirates with the map, but he's in no condition to like go himself to find them. Maybe he hopes he will, but mostly he's concerned with getting drunk and telling tales. So he buys it. He's dead at the start, and the only other character, bar the, you know, all the other pirates are like after the map, except for Ben Gunn, who thought he knew where the treasure was buried anyway, and upon, I guess, either not finding it or not being believed, he is marooned on Treasure Island, and the other pirates all fuck off, which includes Long John Silver, who has sort of become the leader of the gang, if not the captain. Then he is the main conspirator, isn't he, who's after this map. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much,
yeah.
And so, when, I guess, there's pirate hunting Billy Bones, who is, you know, escaped with the map. And their plan is to find him. They do find him. They send Black Dog to find his old crewmate, who turns up and has a nice kerfuffle, doesn't he, in this film? One of the few swashes that buckles.
One of the really good things about this is the intimate action scenes, not so much the like the canony stuff later on, but with that fight inside the pub between Oliver Reed and that other guy, that was very good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. There was one scene where, like, on the ship later on, where the good guys and the bad guys are shooting at each other. They just cut away from that, and then they go back, and I guess the good guys have stopped them, and we don't need to see that, do we? Suit yourself. They kind of jip us out of a few things.
That happens a few times, actually, where like it kind of jumps, and you're like, "Oh, we're in a different place now," which we'll get to when it comes up, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a bit of a fucking. After starting off good, it's a shame that they sort of bottle out of doing complicated action sequence, battles and fights. It also gets very tame. Once they have a big battle between the good guys and the bad guys, and then they go, after that, no one could really be asked to fight properly, so fuck it, we're not doing any more of that.
It's true.
Very odd. But yeah,
there's just the bit where like Jim goes off and manages to somehow scupper the ship more or less by himself.
Yes.
And he just turns up again, and they're like, oh, while you were gone, a lot of shit happened, and now we're here, and they're somewhere else, and we're not fighting anymore.
Yes, it was very, very odd.
Okay.
Yeah, I could say in the 1950s version, though the same thing pretty much happens, it makes a lot more sense how they explain it away. It's exciting that a small boy gets to, take over a pirate ship on his own, but they have left behind limited pirate guards who are. They justify it with the one of them is a cantankerous drunk, and they're fighting, and they sort of kill and attack each other, and then Jim turns up at the right moment. So it's very like ridiculous, but it's also explained away. But in the 1950s version, you go, yeah, sure, this makes sense. But in this one, I was like, oh, we're just a lot of accepting the circumstances are what you say. Is it? A lot of we can't be asked. We have a really bloodthirsty battle, and then like they literally throw in like a keg of burning gunpowder at each other, firing cannons, and then it's like, I guess we can just parley whenever we feel like it and let each other do whatever. And I'll just turn up with medicine and help you, even though I was against you two hours ago. So it's quite shitty later on, I would say.
Unbelievable scenes.
Sorry, Abby?
Unbelievable scenes.
It was literally unbelievable scenes. Yeah. But, Black Dog, I enjoyed this. He looked right, felt right. But the mistake, once they, he, I guess, reports back, we don't see this, but he must go back and tell the pirates, oh, this fucking Billy Bones cunt is in Bilbo Baggins' motel. And then they send the blind pirate, Blind Pew, to be all, like, I don't know, ominous and reapery, and turn up and give him a black spot and basically tip off Billy Bones that we're good at the pirates after you. You've been handed your, I don't know, walking papers or some shit, and they're going to come around in 2 hours.
This is the first film where I've seen that the black spot actually has a message on it. In other films, it's just been, oh, you've had a black spot and now you're scared. It's like, no, the black spot is, turn it over, you got 2 hours, or we're going to come get you at midnight, or whatever this is. So I was like, that makes more sense now, because just giving someone a black spot's just like, woo.
Yeah, you want to get that checked out by a doctor, a black spot could be cancerous.
It wasn't quite as ominous, just giving them a little piece of black paper.
Because it was cut out. Yeah, like, don't, on a white piece of paper with a black dot on is weird, but like, yeah, like a little spot just feels like arts and crafts, doesn't it? my main problem here is we're tipping the guy off, we're giving him time to either, he could just burn them up now they've told him, like he wants to be a prick about it, or he can, he could escape potentially. So Blind Pew turning up and being all, oh, black spot, see you later, we'll be back in a bit, even though we've already come here once. Bit weird. I mean, that's how the story goes. And then
do have like talks about the rules, quote unquote, of like piracy now and again. So I guess that kind of falls under the rules, and even though they're all, bastard pirates, they all stick to the pirate code, I suppose.
And there's a superstitious bunch. Seafarers are often superstitious due to the scariness and nature of the sea and how dangerous the career of any sort of merchant person would be. But you know, and also pirates, there's a sort of vague cutthroat socialism to everything. You're supposed to sort of vote on things and decide things as a group. And the idea of a pirate code is, you know, it's sort of in history. There isn't like a set code they all obey. You know, it's just generally you agree on some rules when you before you go on a voyage, and you're supposed to stick to them. I don't think there's like a fucking handy dandy black spot rule book about the, you know, I don't think it's quite that complicated, but sure, it's ominous, scary. You could flap a little dot around and be all, oh God. Yeah, little Jim Hawkins is there, giving him his last swig of rum and hearing that there's a treasure map in his chest. He gives him Oliver Reed gives him the key and then keels over. And then the mum is like, what the fuck's all this noise? And they go and basically plunder Billy, but they don't. They sort of kick, the man kicks him to see if he's dead or not. Yeah, he's dead. I kicked him. He's definitely dead. Now let's go get the payment he owes.
I did like how immediate that was as well. I was like, is this guy dead? Oh, he is. Let's go steal his shit.
Yeah, we've established there's a doctor that can come. Like the doctor's the one person who stands up to Billy Bones. Billy Bones is getting all across like with some toff guy in a wig. And the doctor's like, listen, dickhead, I'm a doctor and I'm some sort of, you know, well-to-do
Magistrate.
magistrate. Yeah, so you can fucking sit down and shut up. And then Oliver Reed does sort of accept that. So the doctor stood up to us. We know there's a doctor that's like, ah, fuck it, the doctor, let's get. We've got 2 hours to get this treasure. Oh shit, 5 minutes has passed and the pirates are coming. It takes them a long time to get up the stairs, I guess, and find the map and the treasure. Which the mum smells and discards. A lot of people
Loads of
smell
people
this
smell
map.
that little packet, and they never say, "Oh, it smells like this," or "Oh, it smells like that." They just go sniff. Ew.
What about the smell tells them it's important?
Or not? Like, well, who's like, oh, I've got the property of a drunk old man who's died. I'll smell that. No. You just unwrap and look at it, it's fine. It one weird element is. So Jim tells this what's his name, Doctor. So Doctor Livesey is sort of trusted and looked at very endearing. That's not the right word. What's the word? Like the mum looks at him like I love and trust you.
Respected.
Respects four and four whatever. Anyway, after a bunch of pirates attack the place, they run and escape and go find this Doctor Livesey. And Dr. Livesey is like, ooh, cool, a map. Let's open this with my douchebag rich
Bessie
friend. Sorry?
with my Bessie.
My Bessie. What's his name? Trelawney, is it?
Yes.
And they're like, right, let's have a look at this, officially look at it together. Some element of secrecy to it. And then they take a sec to like boot out the butler. They're like, get out. Do you want any sugars? Fucking get out, cunt. Let's have a look at the map. So they do, they discover the treasure map that old Billy Bones has been holding on to. And rather fairly, this is one feature I kind of like about the story, is even though they're essentially toffs, they're like fair to just some young boy like who runs who works in a pub. They're like, oh well, you know, it's your map. We should go get this treasure and we'll charter a ship. And but you can, I mean, you can fucking work on the ship, cunt. You're not getting a free ride. Like, fuck you, kid. You should, I
It's
mean, you
probably
know.
an undertone of if they don't find something to do with this boy, they're either going to have to adopt him or put him in the poorhouse. So they're a bit like, well, you know, if he works on the ship, then he's not really our responsibility, but we know he's all right. So it's sort of a decent compromise, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just half expect rich people to find out there's a treasure map and then kick the boy up the ass and then keep it for themselves, but they're vaguely fair-minded. Although the pitch from pirates is that you get a fairer share. If Hawkins obviously can't afford a ship himself, he has no means to get the treasure without help. So him getting a cut of the treasure this way makes sense. But pirates will give you a fairer share of it. You know, a cabin boy that brought the map. They don't get into the terms, but Hawkins is very trusting. So I guess they just go, yeah, cool idea. And there's a sense that maybe Trelawney's a bit gullible and a bit too enthusiastic and caught up with the idea of finding treasure, not worrying so much about the details.
The doctor absolutely calls him out for being a gossip. It's like, the thing I'm most afraid of is you, because you can't keep your fucking mouth shut.
Yeah, we maybe deal with cutthroats, but it's literally you fucking put it about everywhere that we've got a map. And we already know people have knowledge of the map exists, so it's not going to be literally plain sailing.
Before we get too far, let's not skip over Christopher Lee as Blind Pew. I don't know what I was expecting, but I was not expecting that. I don't think I've ever heard Christopher Lee not talk in like a upper crust booming like English voice before. So to see him being like a mad kind of like regional accented pirate was like, wow, I was not expecting that.
Yeah,
it was amazing. The
scar in the eye.
Yeah, the scarred face and the eye are quite something. And then he's quite aggressive. Like he's very like, there's some where he's just a guy handing out an omen or a message. But this, he's like properly aggressive and after the loot as much as anyone.
And honestly, if I didn't read that Christopher Lee was Blind Pew, I wouldn't have recognized him.
It's fair. It is a departure from his usual approach. Good though.
And then he gets run over by some horses.
Really brutally. Dead. They're just like guys coming to the rescue. They don't even, like, he's a blind guy. Yeah, okay, he's guilty, but like, he's running over him with horses is brutal. They don't even seem like they meant to that much. They're like, oh, awkward. Yeah, he's trampled by horses. I always thought he never, like, in the other versions, I always assumed he didn't come on the adventure because A, he's blind. I don't know, maybe Long John will give him a cut when they come back, maybe. I don't know. I thought it was always a bit like Black Dog and Blind Pew were always like, how come they can't go on the journey because they're compromised identity-wise.
Mm.
But they kind of fucked their cut up by making themselves known early on, and now all the other pirates get to be secret, you know, so. Anyway. So yeah, Trelawney was the problem of the goodies. He's the nuisance because it's his hiring of the crew that causes a problem. He hires a particularly reasonable captain, and then off screen, I guess, he has come across Long John Silver, who is posing or is a landlord of a pub, and he's let the cook or chef, it doesn't matter. He's let the cook of a public house find all the crew, and it turns out they're the past crew of Captain Flint, who buried this treasure and are planning to mutiny when they get the chance, or when it's an opportune moment, isn't it?
I don't know how much of it is just, you know, you kind of know the story of Treasure Island, and you know the character of Long John Silver.
Yeah.
But like, is it supposed to be really obvious that they're Flint's men?
I suppose different versions can do different things. Like, they can show us that they are. I would say this is inferior to the 1950s one. In the 1950s one, they sort of meet Long John Silver, and he's very charming and persuasive, and he's very amicable and likable. And so he talks over Jim sometimes, where Jim might be onto something, and he charms Jim round. He introduces his parrot to him, and he's very likable. And so, even though he's suspicious, he seems legit and believable. And Trelawney, it comes across in the other one like this as well, like just slightly arrogant and a little bit like he thinks his own opinion is good enough. And he sort of has the wool pulled over his eyes in a plausible way. And the other difference that's quite good is in the 50s version, when Jim comes into the pub and he sees that Black Dog is there, Black Dog runs off. And in this one, Long John is kind of not that, oh, he didn't pay, I don't care. Oh, that's terrible. Who's this bloke sitting with him? You're not a pirate, are you? Fucking shut up. Whereas in the original one, in the 50s one anyway, Long John is like, oh no, and he sends some of his pirate crew to chase after Black Dog. So it looks very convincing that Long John wanted to capture him because he was a known pirate. And so that sort of makes you go, oh, maybe I trust this guy. He seemed like on the level trying to get that criminal, you know? Whereas this time, I feel like they really don't bother to get Jim and Long John Silver on the same page, at least in comparison. I know you guys haven't seen the 50s one, so. What do you think, Abby, of Heston, Charlton Heston as Long John Silver?
Well, I've never really found Charlton Heston that charismatic. So in this, it was like, oh, well, I still don't find you especially charismatic. He doesn't do a bad job per se, but I don't know. He's just not the kind of guy I'm into.
He's got some lovely, horrible teeth, if that's not a paradox. And he's looking really
Some of the
old and
time.
oh right, is he not consistent?
There are some moments later on where it's like your teeth have become very nice in the last hour.
Yes, I was like that. I was wondering if it was more to do with close-ups.
And
his stubble grows in like into a beard at some times. I guess they were on an island for an indeterminate amount of time. And at sea for a while as well. Oh, he's all right. He does have the classic. He has a parrot eating his hair while he talks sometimes.
That's cute.
Yeah. And go on,
I was
Anthony.
gonna
Yeah.
say I quite liked him in this. Like he had like the charisma that he needed to be like, oh yeah, this guy is a good guy, you know. But then, when he turns sinister, it's believable, you know.
Yeah, and even when he turns back baby face at one point, I thought a little bit too pathetically, like Robert Newton in the original or the 50s one is very much like you can tell he's always a bullshit artist, but you kind of like him and can believe his motivation. Whereas Charlton Heston in this is like, ah, whatever, I'll be fine. I'm Charlton Heston. Like I'm the main character. Don't have to worry about me. Like he like. Charlton Heston, I think, does have a charm, but it's, I don't know. For me, it felt like he was the wrong casting for Long John Silver. Like he has a kind of bravado, and a cockiness to him that you accept in most roles he does, and a sort of it seems world weary as well, which suits a sort of elder pirate that has been through a lot of shit, stabbed a lot of backs, cut a lot of throats. So his look is okay. But I'm with Abby. I don't fully find him that charming, and there's just not as much time given him to him to be a good guy at the start. I feel like we're just like, hey, here he is. He can hobble about for a bit, and
He's
then
not
it.
wily enough either.
Oh yeah.
There's sort of like, there's just meant to be this air to Long John Silver of he's always up to something. Whereas with Heston's performance, it was more, oh, just this guy again.
He's very confident. Heston is confident in his character. That suits. But yeah, they should. There's not the he lacks a sneakiness. He seems to just not be too worried about anything. Like Long John Silver is constantly potentially being like found out or betrayed, and so later on, especially, he just seems like he's clever and canny, and his men look seem really stupid later on. Whereas I think in other adaptations, they have pirates be a bit more, they're backstabbing and not very trustworthy, but they're not thick. They know which way their bread's buttered, and they mutiny on purpose with reasoning rather than just arbitrary. Now it is time for us to mutiny. And the impatientness is in this film as well, where some of the pirates who are maybe not as savvy as Long John Silver are a little more like, oh, come on, fuck this. We're not playing Poncy underlings for long. But I don't know. I'm all right with it, this version of Long John Silver. Robert Newton, man, he has the edge, so I find it harder to accept. If I hadn't watched it, maybe I'd be all right with it. Like you, Anthony, haven't
Yeah, I
this.
mean,
This was the
like,
first version for you that was any good.
yeah, well, yeah, fair enough. I might check out that version at some point, but no, I liked him, and like he was playing it in the kind of, he's clearly more intelligent than all the other pirates, and he's learnt the kind of like the gift of the gab, and that's his way of ruling everyone in,
Yeah, and
rather than being sinister and wily, he's being clever, you know?
and he even points out as part of his plan, which is essentially we, I've got all my guys. We outnumber the good guys who are honest pirate. Well, not that they're not that honest. They're secretly chartering a ship to get treasure and pretending it's something else that they're doing. So the captain is in on it. Is in on the get it's a treasure hunt. And then, so Trelawney and the Doctor and Jim are the only ones who know, or are the only ones who's supposed to know. I think the captain they hire does give Trelawney, who is the admiral now, a row for like all the fucking crew know this is a fucking treasure hunt, and the guns are in the wrong place. And I don't suspect a mutiny, but I'm saying that there's going to be a mutiny, but I don't suspect it, or I wouldn't come.
It's a possibility. He's like, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it could happen.
Yeah,
I
he's...
did like his attitude throughout, actually, where he was like, you dumb fucks, what are you doing? It's like, you guys over there, just put your fucking finger out, do this. He shoots people. As soon as he thinks there's trouble, he's like, no, this isn't, we're on the ship, we're in the middle of the sea. This isn't the time for being like, ew, but no. If I suspect this guy's up to no good, he's up to no good and he's dead.
Yeah, the role of Captain, what's his name? Captain Smollett or something?
Smollett.
Smollett, right. And so it's a good character to have because he's the sensible, good captain character. And the thing I think I thought was a bit fucked with him was he was a bit of a prick incidentally to like, I mean, fair enough, Long John Silver's just the cook. But he's a one-legged man who hasn't got on the ship yet. And he's like, oh, get in the kitchen, dickhead. Stop chatting, get in the kitchen. And then to even to Jim, who's this is essentially, you know, they're on this expedition. He's a cabin boy, but he puts Jim in his place and tells him you're gonna have to work and stuff. And say, all right, Mr. Killjoy. But I think that's good in a way because you don't want to love the good guys. I mean, baby faces are always a bit like ah, fuck them. It's better to root for the baddies a lot of the time. But he's a good character, and it was weird because the guy has such a weird accent with him. What do you guys make of the way he sounded quite different, and he sounded much more formal than everyone else in like less regional accent, more traditional English, wasn't
Yeah, authoritative. Like you had Livesey and Trelawney, who are kind of like authoritative in their in the kind of well, he's a doctor and he's like a magistrate and kind of thing, that kind of
Yeah.
authority. But then this guy's like a military man who knows what he's doing, kind of authoritative.
Yeah, experienced, knowledgeable, and not going to take shit from these chancers who haven't done this sort of thing very much.
He's
Yeah.
one of the people, like there's loads of people in this. I'm like, I know you from somewhere, but then I looked them up on IMDb and I'm like, I don't recognize any of these things. I think it's just a case of we've seen them like on TV doing small things in loads of different things over the years, kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah,
I
I
had
can't.
the exact same thing. I was just looking at every one of these fuckers and being like, you, what are you from? You!
Yeah, they've done a lot of work. All of them, Yeah, but I can't pinpoint a film I've seen them in other than this. I quite like them, and I mean, I'm reluctant to keep comparing things to the 1950s one, but most of these good guy characters, they swap and it's perfectly fine. For me, it is just like, oh, you need to do a better job with John Silver because he's so important to the story. But, most of the good guys are better. Christian Bale as Jim is a bit weird. He's doing a weird voice, I think. He's a Brit who's been working in Los in America for a while. I mean, he's been, he's a child actor. He's been good stuff in loads of films, but he's suffering from doing like I want to ha I, like I don't know what voice is he doing. It's sort of like he's trying not like he's trying to sound masculine a little bit, but hasn't got any power in his voice.
I'm starting to wonder, you know how everyone sort of made fun of the way he did Batman voice when he was Batman?
Yeah.
I think he might just sound like that when he's not doing a completely different accent. Because he didn't sound like that in American Psycho, but he was pretending to be American.
Well, it's like he thinks being a tough guy, like Jim has to stick up for himself and come across tough, even though he's a young boy. So he does like slightly gravelly teenager voice, like sort of husky-ish, but it's not very intimidating. And he does
I
do it a
think
bit
it's
for
because
Batman.
it's kind of because he's surrounded by great actors who know what they're doing, and he feels a bit out of his depth at times.
Yeah, this is early on, and he looks spectacularly young. And I don't think he's even come out of his sort of he hasn't he's not old enough to look fully handsome yet either. He hasn't got his yeah, not that he's particularly rugged, but he has a sort of something about him that hasn't quite happened yet at this age. It's a good performance, but it is the weaker of all of that. Like you need a good Jack, and he's okay. He's not as fucking awful as the Muppets
Jim.
strip. So, oh my God, I keep doing that, don't I? He's a good Jim. But he's not as good as other versions, but he is better than the shitty kid. The kid in the Muppet Treasure Island is absolutely tedious. But then he's in that to sing soprano and stuff. I was just oh no. I don't know. 1950s one, Molto bene, very good actor. But younger kid, which works nicely for the naivete as well. This guy, he should be a bit more savvy. More plausibly taking over a pirate ship, Christian Bale. But still, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Andy? Was he Christian Bale good, bad, ugly?
I've seen worse, but I've seen better. Like, it's just the curse of child actors, isn't it?
It is more often than not. They're a shame.
I will say he wasn't like for the most part it was fine because he just needed to be the kind of like naive kid who hasn't seen anything before and is just kind of like a bit panicked in situations and doesn't really know what's going on. But then when he does step up and like goes to take over the ship, he's not quite believably intimidating enough.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, other than give it, I would give kudos to I think his name is Bobby Driscoll or something, who plays Jim in the 50s version, because he every expression on his face is perfect. You really can see him thinking about every situation he's in. He reacts like the betrayal on his face and the sort of determination he has when he's being brave is really good. So, sorry, Christian, you've been outdone, but it was serviceable for this. I guess this is what I'm supposed to be talking about. I keep going on about the 50s one; it's terrible. Right, what else happens, guys? They get up and running. Well, that's it. I was going to say, the plan with Long John is, do you know what? We could actually just do this whole thing, get the treasure, have them load it up, then mutiny. And that, why mutiny before and do all the hard work when we can find the treasure? Literally, we outnumber them, so just kick off on the way home, and which would have worked probably better. But we have a few pirates who are a little too uncautious, I suppose, that ruin things. How does it go wrong? Because they set sail, they're pretty much there before things go wrong, isn't it?
Because Jim's hiding in an apple barrel and overhears them.
I mean, before that, the pirates don't like doing hard work for some reason. And it's like, okay, because the rest of the time doing a ship is easy, I guess.
It's that thing I get. You become a pirate because you like find working in the actual navy is tedious and awful. I mean, all like the existence on a ship in this time period is awful no matter what. But I guess if your betters are endlessly like giving you hard tasks to do, rather to be better to be on a pirate ship and feel a little bit more like a valued member. But at the same time, you have to work fucking hard on a pirate ship, so they should be better at doing hard work. I guess it's the villain problem, isn't it? The more villainous you are, it's not like all pirates are reliable, is it? I guess. So
Yeah.
some of your crew are shitheads and spoil things. That is the I guess that's the thing is Long John has his pirate crew, but they've already, fallen out with their previous captain, so they're not exactly on the best of terms. So even though he's got the advantage of a secret, initially his men are pretty crap in some areas. And yeah, like someone wants an apple at the right time, and it means Christian Bale has to weirdly get into the largest barrel of apples I've ever seen. Like a
It makes
small
no
boy.
sense to transport them that many in a pile. The ones at the bottom would get crushed and would be uneatable.
Have some more lovely scrumpy, lovely or like a what's it called?
Cider.
Cider or applesauce or anything, yeah. But like I don't know, a small boy hid hiding in an apple barrel that's nearly empty, I get. But Christian Bale, this large like teenager, having to get into a mega barrel and then weirdly decide to sit down in it and overhear Long John, you know, basically confess to being a baddie and talking to some kid called Dick. He just gives the same like, "Oh, you're smart as paint," you know, lines that he gave to Jim. And so he
That
just sort
reminds
of
me of when Fagin always says, "Always my favorite, don't tell the others."
yeah, there is something Fagin-y about Long John Silver, isn't there? If he had more children going on. There's something, there's a slight creepiness to Long John in this one where I feel like he sort of fancies Jim slightly, like in a young lad kind of way. A bit Greek, you know? Like, do you feel the kind of, just a slight hint of, no, it wasn't there, is it?
It's not that exactly, but there's no. They don't really give you any other explanation. So if you have to fill in the blank based on what they give you, that's the only thing that makes sense, really.
Yeah, because you're willing to, you know, if you're a traitorous pirate and you're going to backstab everyone, why, Jim would, you know, you've already lied to him and you're planning to either kill him or betray him. There are in other versions they give, even in the Muppet one, they give more motivation to Long John as to like he likes Jim because he's interacted with him a lot and maybe he feels bad for betraying him. Maybe just respect. I think there's supposed to be this idea that you respect the fact that Jim's quite handy. Like Jim sort of proves himself, even though he's young, he's brave and determined and capable. And so there's a kind of, oh, fair enough. That's what pirates are kind of like, is if you do your shit properly, you know, fair play. You get a, you know, you know, it's a team effort sort of thing. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just nitpicking, I don't know. But anyway, he's in the apples. And it's not all that dramatic when like it's a bit whatever. When Long John just blabs about the plan. It's a bit, oh. Oh, there's some drama in that he asks for an apple and then he's like, oh no, what about some rum? Yeah, rum. But still get the apple. And then just as they're about to reach the apple and find little Jim, the island is in sight and they all get called up on deck, don't they?
Classic.
Yeah, there's a distinct lack of tension in this film throughout.
Yeah, I don't know why they blow it. That one, you know, they're nearly getting caught, all right. But I think it is just literally when they set up for battles, it goes wrong, doesn't it? Because they sort of they lose interest in them or something. So I think what happens is because Jim is aware now of the traitorous pirates, he can go to the good guys, the Doctor and like Trelawney and all them, and the captain, and say, "Oh, look, never mind what we're doing. We've got a mutiny on the cards." What do you guys make of the way that the good guys deal with it? Because they're kind of outnumbered, and that to me, they come up with a weird plan of we're going to lock ourselves on the ship and let the baddies get away and hope that we win eventually.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all. Do you get that? Don't follow.
There's
Yeah, I
some.
suppose it was the idea was he, like he when they get there, he says like, "All right, you can all. You've got like 24 hours to do what you want on the island. Just like go off and blah 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 to try and, you know, to get them off the
separate the
boat."
numbers of people against you.
Yeah, which they obviously then the pirates, you know, use to get the guns off and stow them on the island ready for anything that might happen as
Yes.
well. But at least, you know, they're off the ship and they're not getting back on the ship, presumably.
Yeah. So yeah. They're cautious, which is understandable because they sort of suggest, well, if we try and arrest them all or kill them, we'll be bum rushed. There's too many of them. We'll be outnumbered and they'll get us and kill us. So we have to do this carefully. So yeah, splitting them up is a good idea. Like some of them is like I guess you have to be careful who you trust on your own team as well. But it does feel a bit like, right, let's lock ourselves in here. And then Like, come on, maybe start killing some of the baddies or arresting them, or I don't know. For whatever reason, they lock themselves in and go, right, we got the map anyway. And we're better to hold up here for now and see how it plays out. And they have some sort of a battle, don't they, with the bad guy pirates when they realize what's going on. And like we've already said, they cut away from that and they go, oh, fuck it. The good guys take the back of the ship. And Long John and the crew don't know what's going on yet because they're on the island. One of the things is that's different, and this is inferior to the 50s one again, is Long John tells Jim to pass his crutch and then pulls him onto the rowboat that's going ashore. And so he has him hostage, and then so they have to kind of let the rowboat go with all the pirates on because they might kill Jim. And it, you know, that's fair enough then. They're separated and it's Jim can still run off like he does in this one. But it's a bit
better.
They
also do that. They also do that in the Muppets, but obviously the 50s one did it first.
Yeah, no, at some point, presumably the 30s one does a version. But I just felt like it makes more sense to have Jim as a hostage rather than just to let them fuck off. And also, why does Jim go on the boat with them? Like, he's now sneaking behind the good guys and getting himself in more trouble this way.
I picked up on that. Like, I didn't quite understand why he was going off with them to the island.
And like you know, and you can understand if he's a hostage, that's that, isn't it? You know, that makes sense then, doesn't it?
I think they do give a line. I think the captain does go like, Jim, you need to stay close to Long John and, you know, you're our man on the inside kind of thing.
Yeah, let the child do it.
Kind of explains it, maybe.
Yeah, it's a bit tenuous. It easily solved as well. It wasn't necessary to do it that poorly. I don't know, it is what it is. Like, they do a very bad job of locking up the pirates as well. Like, you know, fair enough, they're going to escape. That is the plot. But they seem to be just shooting them at them to get back in there, trapped in that trap door now. stay in there, please. The good guys, put the bad guys away.
Which they immediately escape from once they're off the ship.
Yeah
that was dumb as fuck.
It gets a bit convoluted as well because the doctor has to. The doctor keeps doing things on his own, but he pops along to the island, despite the bad guy pirates being there too, to find whatever. Then he finds a little fortress thingy that's been made, like a makeshift fortress. Then he reports back and tells them, oh, we could stay. It's better to stay there than it is to stay in the ship. And again, the 50s one does it a little quicker and more. They sort of spot it and go there. And I think Ben Gunn clues Jim into it. So it's a little more explicable in other versions, but they kind of flap around, like figuring out, like, oh, where should the characters be now? I felt like it loses momentum because we've just got pirates who don't have a map camping on a beach with nothing to do. The good guys coming onto the island for vague reasons of it's better there. And then there's they get in a fortress, which they then lose control of later. And it's like, what? Yeah. I feel like no one knows where they should be. And it's just. The story can work. They have to be in the fortress and they have to leave because the pirate ship can shoot at them with cannons that when it's high tide, the cannons will reach. So that the good guys have to leave the fortress because the ship will be too close. And in this, it doesn't do that. It just goes, ah, whatever. it just sort of bollocks up fairly simple logistics, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not so much like... And it says it's faithful to the book and that can work, but he's not joined up the dots properly at all.
Yes, and like what might make sense like in the pace of a novel doesn't necessarily make sense in the pace of a film.
Yeah, and it might be that it makes sense to scout out somewhere and find somewhere to go before you go there, but I don't know, like all the upshot is really is that Jim escapes and bumps into marooned Ben Gunn, who has become a bit mad, talks in a fun way in the third person, and answers questions for you, and says I and says you and so forth. Very enjoyable.
He was fun, actually. I liked him.
Yeah.
Although I was convinced the actor was what's his name? Frank Kelly, the Irish actor from. Like Waking Ned And like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the Tim Burton one.
All right, no.
You know the
I know what you're on about, yeah.
guy? Yeah, I was convinced it was him, and then I like looked him up later on. It's like, oh, it wasn't him. It was some other guy. I'm like, no, it was Frank Kelly. What are you talking about?
You've reminded me of something I meant to say towards the beginning, and it's just that every now and again, Oliver Reed had Father Jack energy, and I was here for it.
He's doing a weird Scottish accent, isn't he? As Billy Bones. What do we reckon of Charlton Heston trying an accent out? It sounds.
I thought it worked really well because I was coming in thinking like, oh, they've got an American doing a bloody pirate. It's going to be awful. But it wasn't too bad, was it?
It was all right, with the caveat that the expectations were low. Yeah, it was fine. I did, you just accept it as, oh yeah, that's an actor doing a piratey voice. Yeah, okay, don't question it per se.
Sure.
Shiver my timbers.
Yeah, except there's a lot of damn your eyes. Oh, that said a lot.
I actually love the amount of times they said, "Damn your eyes."
I mean, from Blind Pooh, fair enough, because he's got that on his mind. It's happened to him, it seems. Someone's damning of eyes has damned him. But everyone leaning on that pretty heavy. I do like the odd piratey phrase thrown in. It is enjoyable to hear them talk like what is it, 1700s rapscallions. So it's there's some nice language used. Occasionally, sometimes a bit, what the fuck are they talking about?
There was a sense of, because like a lot of those lines have become so kind of like ingrained and almost like stereotypes
Yeah.
of but then they originated from this novel, but then you hear
Yes.
them, you know, saying pieces of eight and like and shiver my timbers, and so it's a
Yeah.
little off because of that.
Yeah. And some line reads are better than others. Sometimes they do justice to the novel. Obviously, when you the more versions you watch, different people, different actors hit different lines, so you enjoy them or ignore them in different versions. So I don't know, right? This was fine. But anyway, Ben Gunn was all right. I like his little quilt patchwork for Gillett or whatever he's wearing, his fucked up shoes. They didn't overplay the madness. In some versions, he's a right kook. Other versions, you know, he's a bit more, those bats has left me here for 3 years, but I haven't eaten Christian food in 3 years. Have you got any cheese?
That would also be the first thing I asked for.
Yeah,
What would you
bit
miss
of
the
dairy,
most? Yeah,
please.
well, a slice of cake, please. That'd be nice. It's all the processed food that requires more than just killing and cooking, isn't it? It's the complex stuff.
Although he said there were goats on the island, so in theory he could have made goat cheese if he'd really tried.
Yeah, well, in the 50s version, he's made a whole raft out
Honestly.
of goat's leather or whatever. Yeah, goat cheese. I mean, it's a lot. What you have to make, like a fucking one of them butter churns or something to make. I mean, or you have to have a gauze to make
Cheese
cheese. I don't know,
cloth, yeah.
cheesecloth.
He could have made it work. He's had 3 years. He could have tried.
Can make cheese in his pants. Lovely, lovely foreskin cheese. Oh, sorry.
That's
Yes. Hey, what I like about Ben Gunn as a character is he's usually just like, all right, nice to see you. Come with me. He's never that, like, even though he's, spoilers, he's found the treasure already and has stored it in his cave. There's never a sense that he's going to keep it to himself. He's like, what am I going to fucking spend it on? Like, I got all this treasure. I need off this island, please. But also, just I'm happy to see you ever. But maybe not the one-legged man. He still freaks me out. Don't trust him very much. So he's a little bit like frightened of Long John Silver, understandably, because he's part of the marooning posse. And obviously, Flint's pirates are on the ship or are now on the island, So he plays it cautiously and he stays in the background and hidden away a lot. But I like his attitude. I like the way he was played in this. The right level of cowardly and sensible. He's a survivor. He's a sensible man in that regard, even though he's a bit mad. And also the way that all of the good guys treat him is like a just some fucking mad old twat. Fuck him.
Yeah, they don't even believe he's legit at first when the doctor and Trelawney hear about him. They're like, ah, fuck that guy. And then they find out he's murdered a bunch of the other pirates who sleep. And they're like, okay, yes, he can have some cheese. That's fine.
I was really, it really fucked me off, actually, that there's a sort of weird bit where he slits the throat of some of the pirates. Like, Ben Gunn sneaks down to the pirate camp and kills some of them. Crucially, not Long John Silver. And then fucks off again. And then all the good guys are like, what happened to that? Well, that was a good plan, whoever did it. Jim, was it you? Or what's going on? And then even like Long John is like, oh, you were fucking, if you'd have woke me up, I'd got you. And, oh, yeah. You'd have got him, would you? You didn't know, did you? He had you. He had you banged to rights. But that is not in the 50s version. And I'm like, good, that shouldn't be. He should not be killing some of the pirates. He should be as scared of them. And, you know, watching out from... You know, he knows the island the best. He can hide on it really well. I don't know why he's killing pirates. That fucked it up for me, in my opinion.
I did enjoy the line. I was like, what? You've never seen a man with this throat slit before?
Yeah, when you wake up and a few people have had their throats cut. Was it one or was it several? I was a bit confused by that. Abby, you thought it was several of them were killed, is it?
The dialogue implied several.
We see one. Sometimes the pirates the numbers are very low, and they infer there were more of them with dialogue. And you're like, I don't know. I saw like four of the cunts, you know? Sometimes it's like they haven't got the cast there to represent.
There was a line about some pirates going off and kind of giving up.
Yeah, we didn't see it though, did we? Because they just forgot about them a bit.
One of the biggest problems of this film is they don't say stuff outright when they really should. Where it's like, no, you have to tell us some people have left. They can't just not be there later and leave us thinking, are these guys going to sneak up? Is this an ambush? No, they're just fucking gone, are they?
We just can't be asked with those extras anymore. There were some really handy characters that didn't even really have names and stuff. Like some of the good guys were quite, you know, good in battle and things, and they don't really get a moment other than they're there to do stuff. There's a shabbiness to this that I was disappointed with. That it was literally, maybe I'd be coming at it like more positively, but it was just when you've seen better, you've seen it executed more effectively, you kind of can't help but see the flaws.
Well, that's the thing. The only other one I've seen recently enough to remember is Muppet Treasure Island, which is great, but I still prefer it to this.
What this lacks, crucially, is a bunch of rats having a cruise. They don't have that joke going throughout this, which is a shame. I missed, you know, the rats like having a luau and things. They also, yeah,
you wouldn't call this film fun, would you?
No. But, you know, it doesn't have racially insensitive tribes characters that Muppets does either. So, you know, whatever. Ben Gunn does infer that he hasn't eaten Christian food, or he possibly hasn't seen a Christian face in a while. Does that infer that at some point there might have been natives that he's come across, either on the island or from other islands?
Hmm.
I guess it doesn't matter that much. I'm just wondering about it, if there's like some cannibals hanging out somewhere else or something that we avoid.
I mean, it's got to be called Skull/Skeleton Island for some reason.
Yeah, because bloody Flint keeps draping skeletons everywhere to point. Why even have a map?
Oh, yeah. One of my notes is just Captain Flint is a sick fuck. just using dead bodies as set dressing. Like, no. I don't care how much of the... I understand that piracy comes with a certain amount of violence and callousness, but using a dead body as a pointer, that's a bit much.
Well, I think Blackbeard used to chuck corpses in with the buried treasure, or someone did, I can't remember.
The thing about this film was there wasn't a whole lot to stick your teeth into. It was quite... Everything was covered quite thinly. So it's like, we're doing this scene, that scene's done. We're doing this scene, that scene's done. On.
Yeah, there's some nice bits in principle and some courageous do-gooding. But I think plausibility goes out the window sometimes. And, you know, in the book, okay, the kid is a proactive hero. He is for kids to, children to read the book or have it read to them and enjoy the fact that a kid is, you know, the protagonist and getting stuff done and learning how dangerous and exciting adventures out there can be. So I guess one issue is, okay, Jack keeps fucking off on his own with weapons and doing shit without, you know, consulting. Like, brave as it is, come on, mate, what are you doing? You can't take over a pirate ship on your own. Why would you even assume you could?
What I was going to say was that's one of the contributing factors to him not really having a rapport with anyone, because he needed to have a rapport with Long John for the whole arc of the story to work, but also with, say, at least the Doctor, one of those guys, for him to have a genuine bonding experience with. But he doesn't really, and then we have to sort of believe that there's a relationship between them that actually means anything to any of them.
And the doctor is also prone to pissing off on his own. Like, he off camera makes a cheese deal with Ben Gunn. Like, they eventually takes or ch takes wraps up cheese and then fucks off to where all the dangerous pirates previously were. Like,
He
oh, the.
also he upset me deeply by just cutting off the point of the cheese and leaving the rest of the cheese behind. I was like, that's incredibly bad etiquette. That's I oh,
Well, he's taking
furious.
the best bit of the cheese for the guy, right? He wants to make sure he's agreeable, perhaps. Although he was happy to eat a ch cheese rind in some cases. I don't know, a little bit too much independence from nearly everyone. Even Long John doesn't have enough of his, like, they have his crew have to betray him, but he doesn't seem to care that much about them. In all versions, he's out for himself. But I feel like he needs to have a rapport with someone as well. And everyone's a little too individual in this one. But, you know, one of the things that happens is the good guys take over the little makeshift, not fort, but close enough to a fort thing. They can then take all their guns and they get shot at from the big ship, don't they? Like, the pirates have burst out of the holding area. And shoot cannons at the little robot full of the good guys. The good guys get sort of get hit, but not killed somehow.
I was all right with it until that point because they were slightly falling short of where they needed to be, where it's like, oh, they didn't quite hit them. That's disappointing. Then they overshot, and I'm like, no, you went through someone to get to that overshot. And then when they somehow managed to shoot the opposite end of the rowboat from the ship, I was like, how did no one get hurt when you shot that end of the rowboat?
There was a lot of actual, like, kind of like explosions where people are caught in and they just kind of stand up and go like, "Oh, I'm fine, I'm fine, it's fine."
I'm all right, it's slightly
It
dirty.
it's A-team logic of just dust yourself off and you're fine. Yeah, that's dumb, but okay. The other thing that happens is quite mad. Is they've taken one of the cannons, the good guys, and have taken it to the fortress. And then two guys fucking hold up the cannon and fire it like a fucking bazooka. And then they're a bit shocked that it kicked them back so much. You're like, are you joking? They're broken your arm off and not worked in the slightest.
Also,
Fucking
both of you are
hell.
deaf now.
Yeah, but also, didn't you get the cannon wet when it fell in the fucking sea? What are you talking about? A lot of the gunpowder is probably wet. Whatever. They have a fortress fight against the pirates. There's I can't remember. There's a bit of white flag waving at some point where
Oh, when
Long
they were
John negotiates.
parley.
Yeah, but they have a big bloody gunfight where people get hurt and killed, and it's properly like, oh, fair play, we're doing this. This is scary for a young Jim. Apart from he's perfectly handy.
They killed James Cosmo. Bastards.
That the guy who was in Game of Thrones, the mustache
Yes.
guy?
Yes.
They introduced a few good guys last minute as well. They're like, hey, these guys are also here, and I guess some of the pirates, these are guys now as well. I was like, okay, where were they till now? Doesn't matter. Why did they kill the guy called Arrow? We didn't get much motivation. We just what it, that happens in the book, so it happens now. Was
Yeah, there was
in
no reason given.
Like, he is a fuddy-duddy and a rule stickler, I guess, is the usual reason. But in this, he's just some bloke who likes rum. Like, they go to good length in both Muppets and 50s version. They give him motivation to kill Arrow, the bloke. You know, like they go, oh, look, we need to trick him into drinking loads of rum so it's plausibly fell off the ship. They have a proper funeral for him in the 50s one, I think. Well, they did have a
But yeah,
brief thing in this.
it doesn't make sense because if he's just willing to be drunk all the time and doesn't care, surely he'd be on their side.
Yeah, plus the captain's like, oh, fuck him then, drunken bastard when he dies in this one. But there's more motivation in other versions anyway, because he's like a stickler. Maybe he's onto them, I don't know. There's a lot of like fanny fucking around until eventually things calm down. The good guys are injured and are holding up in the fort. The pirates are sort of holding off and occasionally firing warning shots from their camp. And then it seems they've slept in a swamp or something and have all got ill from malaria. And so it ends up they when they're in the fortress, when the good guys have pissed off camera, presumably to do with this cheese-based deal they do with Ben Gunn, the pirates are in there. The doctor just turns up and is like, hey, brought you medicine, drink it down, you bastard. He chucks it down one guy's throat.
Yeah, they keep mentioning a deal that they made, but because we didn't see the deal made and they don't say what the deal is overtly, you're just like, okay, I guess.
And also, you can't trust Long John Silver anyway, so we don't know that that happened. It presumably isn't what happened. Is I don't know. It's a bit weird. It's really unneat, and it doesn't need to be. But like, so the pirates are just whatever now. They're come bring the doctor in. We won't kill him. We won't do anything. He'll give us medicine and leave again. And in the meantime, while what went on while the pirates and good guys switched locations or whatever, Jim went on his own. He snuck out, got in the boat that
Ben Gunn.
Ben Gunn made, with hard graft, castaway style over the years. And so he pops along in his boat to sneak up onto the big ship. And his plan is to take over from the pirates. Luckily, though, they're fighting each other. One of them's like drunk as fuck, and they get into an argument and fight. But Mr. Hands, is it? Is the remaining pirate, and he's wounded but still fine. And so
Oh, he
Christian,
was wounded. That makes a bit more sense.
did you think he'd had his period or something? What did you think was going on with all the blood and
I
stuff?
don't know. I just thought he was like maybe a little bit drunk, and then Jim turns up and he's like, yeah, okay, I'll help you. Why not?
Well, he'd sort of fallen and smacked his head as well, I think. Christian Bale plays it like, right, I'm in charge and the captain. You're going to help me turn the ship around and maroon it somewhere else. And you're like, why would he? I mean, he's on the ground
Yeah.
now. But like,
I was okay. I was with the film until this point. And I just didn't believe that this could happen, that the whole Jim just kind of turning up and convincing this guy to help him move the ship to the other side of the island, just the two of them.
yeah, and he
Yeah, it
like
doesn't make
fed,
sense.
he cuts the rope with, I don't know what, the anchor or whatever it is. So
He
he
cut
set
something, yeah.
he cut a big rope that, stops the ship, makes the ship be able to move around or some bollocks. Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna have to make the comparison, but in the 50s version it's straightforward. He comes and Hans is injured from having killed the other guy. Like, they have a proper violent battle. And then so he's injured and he's on the ground, and then he's not quite dead, so he starts to fight with Jim, and they chase up the rigging like they do in this one. And then events the same thing. It's, they're shot slightly differently, but Jim has to load his guns and shoot Hans, and Hans has got a knife. And they initially like are just like not Mexican standoff, but there's a few beats where it's like, okay, cool, you win. You've got a gun on me. And then Hans throws a knife, gets Jim in the arm, and Jim shoots him and he falls to his death and stuff. That happens in this, but it gets to it in the 50s one. There's no sense of let's turn the ship and move it a lot. It's literally all Jim does is cut a rope and let the ship drift into maroon into what's it called? Like marooning itself? Not marooning.
Beaching wasn't even
Beaching.
dramatic.
It wasn't, was it?
Very slow and whatever, yeah. But this one is
Although
literally.
there was a brilliantly blood-curdling scream when he fell off.
Sure.
Like a little bit ridiculous.
And Jim does contend with the fact that he's now the first time he's killed a man. So he sort of.
Oh, yeah, I did like the way he floated, like he sank into the water while Jim's looking at him.
Yeah, like, okay, I'm a bastard as well. Cool. It needed to be done, but still, you know, you turned up there to kill pirates and you've successfully done that. Yeah, it's fine, whatever. To me, it makes more sense for him to do very little to be able to beach the boat, but okay, this stuff was a bit more elaborate. And then Jim pops back to discover that the pirates are now in the shanty fortress thing. And so he's captured. And again, we have the problem of why are people motivated? Because the pirates are like, oh, we've got Jim, let's kill him, we can't be trusted. And then Long John sort of sticks up for him. And you don't quite know why. Like,
I figured it was just like a sort of a backup plan if things went south, which they clearly were heading towards.
Yeah, there's this constant idea of, look, when this all shakes out, I might end up in court over this, so I want to blackmail people into getting me off, you know? There's a, look, if I'm nice to you guys, you've got to fucking speak up for me in court when this inevitably ends up there. And I was like, oh, that's a long way off. We're very far from an English courthouse at the minute, guys, so don't worry too much. You're supposed to be bloodthirsty pirates. But I don't want to hang. I don't know. So
yeah, you know, and then this is just kind of where the film kind of falls apart for me, because I was enjoying it up until this point, and then I don't know, all the action and drama just kind of stops, and then they just go looking for the treasure for a while, don't find it, and then they're dead. Yeah,
there's not enough of a, well, you need to have clear hostages and reasons why. So in the novelization, okay, the pirates might start to turn on Long John, partly because, you know, we're not getting to this treasure. You know, his advice isn't all that strong, potentially. Maybe he's going soft. He wants to spare Jim's life. And I think the idea should be, and I'm not sure it's conveyed in this version, but Long John Silver wants to spare Jim because he likes him a bit. And there's an element of this. The map is crucial. So in some versions, Jim has the map and Long John finds it on him and keeps it a secret to himself so the other pirates don't know about it. But in this one, it just sort of gets thrown up. It gets just turfed up in a kind of whatever kind of way.
Then they get given the map in the scene we don't see while Jim's on the ship scuttling it.
Right. And I think it is better in other versions just because they make it clear that it's a tense bargaining thing. And then the other pirates kind of have a meeting and give, like, fucking Long John Silver the black spot. And it's all for nothing, because as soon as they find out he's got a map, they're like, oh, cool, then you're still the captain. Let's find this treasure. And then they get to finding the treasure with, you know, not much urgency. They just sort of, you know, pootle along. And it does seem a bit weird that Long John Silver's kept Jim around, but I would have, you know, in other... You can do it so that it makes sense. And in this one, I don't think it justified it. But anyway, they go fucking looking for the treasure. They eventually find it. That it is a big empty hall with chests that have already been opened. Uh-oh. Fuck you, Long John. You knew it was nothing. Let's all turn on each other. And even Long John's like, right, get ready, Jim. Here's a gun for you, buddy. You're absolutely on my side now. I don't know why you can trust Jim so much, to be honest. If I was Jim, I'd just run off. What's it like one-legged man going to do in an ass-kicking contest? Nothing, isn't it? Classic. That's the saying, right? Like, come on. Well, like, basically, all the good guys just turn up with guns and shoot the fuck out of them because old Ben Gunn is there and to be like, hey, here you go. Here they are. Yeah, turns out Ben Gunn's the king in all this because, you know, he's survived. He picks the right side. He's got the treasure already and it gets him out of there. And he gets his cheese, right? It's pretty good.
It's his true victory.
Yeah. All the good guys basically, you know, either kill or capture the pirates. And they just kind of go, look, we got the treasure in Ben Gunn's cave. And then Ben Gunn's a bit smug about it, but still slightly afraid of Long John. Long John's clearly jealous and angry, but what are you gonna do? You know? And then it's like, let's all play with the treasure and a Scrooge McDuck kind of enjoy the treasure for a bit. That's nice, isn't it? What do you guys think of just Ben Gunn just being like an afterthought in his own treasure? Like, he has this hoard of treasure. He doesn't negotiate. We never see any negotiations. It's just a given that, right, we're taking all this now. And you can come if you want, but we don't care about you that much.
Well, that's the thing. It's he just wants off the island. He's learnt that treasure doesn't matter. It's like he just wants cheese and some people in his life again.
It's a nice Christian food. Yeah, I can understand him just being like, look, let's just get out of here. And not wanting to him not get the treasure not going to the pirates that abandoned him, he must like, I suppose, isn't it?
He may also have it where if there was, say, a bounty on his head or anything like that, he has now earned his freedom. So it's kind of like, yeah, this is great. I just get to go home. Nobody's going to try and kill me. I can have a life. Thank you very much.
I looked up on Wikipedia just out of curiosity if anything was known as to what happens to Ben Gunn after the events, or I don't know if it's in the book or not, but it seems he got back and with his share of the booty, he spent it all in a few days and then lived out the rest of his life just working as a porter. So, not the luckiest guy in the world, but you know, alive, got a story to tell. Probably grateful to be a porter after all, like 3 years, you know. Maybe you get used to it, kind of Robinson Crusoe style, and quite like Bis Island life. Maybe
Hell of
not.
a story for him to be telling the people he's porting stuff for.
Yeah, no, he'd be up there with old Billy Bones for, you know, pirate stories, wouldn't he? The man who lived and alive for 3 years had a treasure and is now serving you fucking dessert.
In a more
Poor you.
modern era, that would be like the taxi driver, but it doesn't shut up while you're in there.
Yeah, you wouldn't be fully buying it either. You'd be like, oh, yeah, all right, whatever, old man, shut up. Then someone will come and listen to him tell a story and write a famous book about it and make loads of money. Anyway, what does happen? The thing that's a bit shit, but pro I don't know, more plausible is so long they got all the treasure back in the Hispaniola, which is the ship they've sailed there in, and they unfuck it off the beach and they're heading back. And weirdly, Long John Silver, they just keep as a cook, even though he should be a prisoner. They're like, no, you can cook for us. You definitely won't try and poison us or anything, really.
Well, they talk about throughout that you need a certain number of people to be able to steer a ship.
Maybe
So
cook your
while
own
they don't
food, though.
trust him, they might be able to do it without him to run the ship, but he couldn't do without them to run the ship.
Yes, but he's the loser in this, isn't he? I mean, he is initially defeated, and then you know he's going to be tried back in England. But they just let him have free roam and just like you know.
What Abby was saying was that he couldn't poison them because he'd just be, you know, a one-legged man in charge of a giant ship,
But he
and
does
there's not
get
much he can
away.
do.
He gets away with some treasure in a small ship, which is worse, really. I mean, he would be in the same
But
situation.
that's why they're not worried about being poisoned, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a bad idea in the sense that he was free to escape, but they didn't worry about any repercussions of violence. In the form of violence against them, because he needs them if he intends to stay on the ship.
I know, but when faced with hanging, you might want to kill the men who might cause you to die before you go quietly, you know, I don't know. It was an oversight, and it didn't pay off because he did escape. But this one, he asks, you know, he talks to Jim, and Jim's like, rightly, go fuck yourself. You're a fucking liar and a murderer. Absolutely not. I've been an absolute mensch this whole time. Absolute MVP of this story. Go fuck yourself, John Silver. Which is more appropriate because I think the traditional ending is for some reason, Jim's kind of nice to him and lets him escape and helps him escape. Like, there's different versions where Jim is more helpful or not. Like, there's times where, John Silver has a gun on Jim and decides not to kill him, and therefore Jim goes, "All right, you can get away with some treasure this time." And in this case, he just is like, nah, fuck you. And then all that happens is he breaks free of his own accord, and he puts a knife to Ben Gunn's throat, threatens him to not tell anyone, and then lowers himself away in a boat with some of the treasure, and gets away with a head start, basically. And is a let go because they're like, oh, we're not turning this massive ship around for this bollocks. And then in the Muppets one, like, they let him go with loads of treasure. But then he's like sort of seen sinking in his little boat at the end, which is like, oh, fair enough.
He's also played by Tim Curry. So there isn't a single person on earth that wouldn't have let him go.
I can't stay mad at you, Jim. Oh, you're a good boy, Jim. Kisses. Hello, Heston, though, he's off. He's got his little tiny boat and his little tiny sail. Does he have a sail on it? And off he pops to freedom with his, he's stolen some of the gold. But fuck it. I don't know. I prefer it with Jim helping him a bit, even though it's a bit like, you can't trust this man. He's a swindler, con man, and a murderer. Why would you? Don't go back on his side, Jim. He's charming only. He's a liar. But, you know, there's times where Jim has had his life spared genuinely by Silver. So I kind of get the, like, all right, you're a lovable rogue rather than an absolute bastard. So I don't mind the endings where he goes free and it's with a little bit of help and a well-wishing from the good guys. But this one he just fucks off on his own accord. Not as interesting, in my opinion. What do you guys think of the ending?
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's as lackluster as the rest of the film.
It's a shame because, Anthony, you seemed quite positive at the start. And I guess
I wouldn't say as lackluster as the rest of the film. I totally enjoyed like the first half, but it did just after a while. It got a bit boring and a bit nonsensical.
Yeah, because it's a good yarn. It just wasn't executed to its fullest potential, I think.
Yeah, and then the trouble of being as, you know, as close to the source material as possible is, like, this is like a 400-year-old book, you know?
Yeah.
And what passed as exciting in those times really is not that exciting these days, kind of thing.
What's not exciting about two dudes firing a cannon that they're holding in their hands? That's epic. The guy throws a barrel of explosives. It wasn't that exciting. They like shoot a guy with a barrel that's lit on fire and he doesn't fall down and get shot and he just lobs it at them and they all go, oh no, and explode, like dive. Whoa. They made it boring. Some of the swashbuckling, you know, it's the swashbuckling at the start was better than the end. The middle sort of, it loses it, doesn't it? It doesn't quite get you back. And it's all well enough acted and it looks quite reasonable, doesn't it? Occasionally, it looks, you know, a little cheap and dated, but I think, you know, it's pretty good.
It is
good.
A TV budget. Like, for a TV budget, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, you properly can see the sea in it and there's big ships and stuff. It's not like, you know, a little cardboard set. Like, the Muppets one feels very, very small. I mean, it's literally on a Muppet stage where you have loads of puppets, but it feels very limited, I will say. So that, you know, there's that. But you're not, it shouldn't. There's loads of versions. I just think this isn't the optimum. We could, you know, I think the book is very enjoyable, and it, you know, even though it's been a while, it is a classic adventure story for young boys and girls to read. It's just a kind of my first exciting pirate story to get his teeth into the myths and legends about, you know, piracy. And it doesn't. It's not like it paints a myth that's stupid. It's like the pirates are dangerous and bad, but you know, the stuff that happens to them is interesting and macabre and exciting. Like, it's not painting pirates like sort of, you know, stupid children's characters that aren't dangerous, is it? Like, they're bloodthirsty backstabbers. So fair play.
I'd say if you've never dipped your toes into the world of Treasure Island before, this is a decent starting point.
And if you like it, and it's worth seeing it just for another version, like, oh, Oliver Reed's in it, and like you say, Christopher Lee, it's worth it just to see, like, a different cast have a crack at it, isn't it? Like, so if the story's enjoyable, this is an okay version to try out as a different flavour. What say you, Abby? You were sort of a big fan of the Treasure Planet. So, was this a failure or a success? Would you recommend it?
It's not a failure, but when there's so many versions of Treasure Island, you might be better off just trying some others to see what you get. It's like there's a big sample size you can go from. So it's like this one is fine. Try another one. It may also be fine. Maybe shit. Might be good. Who
Well,
knows?
as I've said, 1950, that's the one to watch for me. That's the best one I've seen of the versions I've come across. There's a lot of bad ones, so you can go looking for treasure, but you can very much find empty chests sometimes. So have a look at the trailer before picking out other treasure islands. Make up your mind a little bit beforehand. Don't just go randomly picking because some booby traps will be there. 1950s, that's my hot tip, my hot map, my tip to the real treasure. The real treasure was the 1950s one I watched along the way. That's all right, isn't it? It's all right. So anyway, if that's that, we'll sail off for another week and I don't know, circle back for another film another time. Do ships circle back? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they can. It's a big turning circle, but sure.
That's right. That's the other thing with all ship-based stories, they have to be like the just the hits because all those sorts of things took ages. Just ships turning round took hours. There's the sea battles lasted hours and hours due to how long ships take to turn and face the right way, and chases could last for days, and traveling would take months. It's just like a lot more tedium on the old Seven Cities than they make out in these films and these novels, isn't it? Don't recommend. Watch the highlights. Yeah, anyway. Avast ye, toodly pips, yar, scurvy, cur, etc. Bye.
Indeed. Arg.
Yar. What do pirates say instead of goodbye?
I'll see you
Aloha.
in hell.
Yes, you know. And then they run you through with a cutlass. Yeah, fair enough. See you in hell, matey. We're very cordial, though. We're all shipmates. So everyone says, matey, like it's a bubble bath.